The cost of Japanese cars, TVs and other electrical goods will fall. Exports of Australian beef will rise and billions will be added to national income. That's the promise of the deal struck by Japan and Australia, hailed as the most significant trade pact between the nations in nearly 60 years. The Prime Ministers of both countries last night signed off on a free trade deal that will, in time, cut tariffs on 97% of Australian exports to Japan. The deal was years in the making, and the sticking point had been slashing Japanese tariffs on agricultural imports, which stood as high as 219% on some goods. It's part of a deepening of ties between the two countries that's being closely watched by China. I spoke with the Prime Minister after the deal was done. Tony Abbott, can you explain what the deal you've struck will mean for Australians?
It will mean much better access to the Japanese market for Australian agricultural products, particularly beef and dairy products. And it will mean, over time, cheaper consumer goods here in Australia. So it's good for consumers, it's good for jobs, and it's good for prosperity.
And I do understand that the agricultural negotiations were difficult, but do tariffs on our beef exports, for example, ever fall to zero?
Not under this deal at this time, but they certainly halve, and there's a big drop in the first year. So this is a very significant improvement, and it's far better than many people expected, and it's far better than anything that Japan has ever been prepared to offer any other country.
I understand that in the long run, the tariffs will fall to 20% on beef imports to Japan, and it'll take 18 years to get there, so it's not free trade even in the end, is it?
No, but there's a very steep drop in tariffs in the first year, and this will give Australian exports to Japan a head start in the market. Certainly my understanding is that Australian beef exporters are very, very happy with this breakthrough.
In the broad, Prime Minister, how will Australians feel the difference of a deal like this? Will we see job growth in Australia? Will there be cheaper goods for Australians to buy?
Well, let's, if I may, Chris, refer listeners to the trade treaty between Australia and Japan back in 1957. Now, this was one of the most significant economic initiatives in our history because before that deal, we hardly had a coal industry, we hardly had an iron ore industry, we didn't really have a gas industry to speak of. But based on that deal, our coal industry in New South Wales and Queensland took off, our iron ore industry in Western Australia began and then developed massively. Japan has been responsible for so much of the resources sector development which we've enjoyed over the last 4 or 5 decades and which has been at the heart of our maintenance as a prosperous first world economy. Now, this deal could be equally significant in the years and decades ahead because it does create a kind of special relationship between Australia and Japan.
Now, you met with the Japanese National Security Council. What was on the agenda there?
Well, we already have a pretty high-level cooperation between Australia and Japan on defence and security matters. Our militaries exercise together. There's been some Japanese purchasing of Australian defence equipment, such as Bushmasters. We want to see more interoperability between our militaries. We want to see more exercises between our militaries. We want to see, over time, a more significant intelligence cooperation, and this is about trying to ensure that the relationship with Japan is really, as I said, an important, almost a special one, but it is building on a very strong existing foundation.
When you say a special relationship with Japan, and in the past you have said an ally, of course we've been told since then you meant a small a ally, do you fear that will be seen as provocative by the Chinese?
Well, it's very interesting you should ask that question, Chris, because the point I keep making here is that our security cooperation is for universal values. It's not against any specific country. And as far as I'm concerned, as far as just about every country is concerned, what we want to see is more democracy, more freedom, more respect for the rule of law, and that's what our security partnerships are about.
But that Japanese National Security Council that you met with, and you are in fact the first foreign leader to meet with that Security Council, the first item on its agenda was the dispute it had with China over the Senkaku Islands. And China has border disputes with Japan, South Korea in the East China Sea, and the Philippines and Vietnam in the South China Sea. The neighbours of China are concerned that it is spreading out its elbows.
And Chris, we don't take sides in territorial disputes. We simply say that they must be resolved peacefully and in accordance with the rule of law. We say there should be no change to the status quo, which is brought about by force or the threat of force. Now, this is a long-held, long-standing, well-known and well-accepted Australian position, and there's no change to that position.
Can you be frank with China, though, about its territorial ambitions? Because, of course, Foreign Minister Julie Bishop tried to do that with the Senkaku Islands dispute, and she was dressed down by a counterpart. Can you really be frank with China without that kind of reaction from China?
Well, Chris, as you know, it's not my practice to lecture other countries, but it is my practice to stand up for Australian values. And as I said, Australian values, indeed, I think universal values are to want democracy, freedom, peace, and the rule of law. I think these are the sure guides for all countries in a difficult and complex world.
Japan has been watching very closely, as the world has, what's been going on in Ukraine, and I know that there is a concern there that other countries may well see that a weakened United States will not come to the aid of its allies. Has anyone raised that issue with you about the weakness of the White House?
Oh, look, the short answer is no, because just about every country in the world wants to have a good and strong relations with the United States, which remains the world's only real superpower. Yes, China is growing rapidly economically. Understandably enough, all countries that grow economically want to improve the efficiency and the effectiveness of their military. That's understandable. It's normal. It's natural. But I think there is by just about every country, Mr. Putin's Russia right now accepted an understanding that we will all advance together, or very likely none of us will advance at all. It's overwhelmingly in the interests of the countries of the world that there be peace, that there be freedom, that there be respect for the rule of law, and I think that's well understood in North Asia.
Finally, just on one domestic issue, if I might, the WA Senate result not entirely settled yet, but do you envisage that you'll have a difficult time implementing your agenda over the next 2 years?
Well, I never take anything for granted. I've got to talk respectfully to the coalition party room, let alone independent and minor party senators. So we don't take anything for granted. We expect our agenda to be properly scrutinised by the Parliament. But I also expect, Chris, that everyone in the Parliament after the 1st of July will respect the mandate that the government's got. And if there's one thing that was clear on Saturday in Western Australia, it is overwhelming rejection of the carbon tax and the mining tax. They're anti-Western Australian taxes. And the sooner they're gone, the better for all of us.
Well, whatever happens in future, it won't be dull.
I'm sure we'll give you plenty of copy.
The Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, in Japan, and he'll be arriving in South Korea later this morning. But the RAF plane carrying the media and some high-powered CEOs has broken down, which is either disturbing or hilarious, depending on your worldview.